"See, he never can forgive my living on the other side of the river," said Peter Ivanovich, smiling at Shebek. Then, still talking of the distances between different parts of the city, they returned to the court. Besides considerations as to the possible transfers and promotions likely to result from Ivan Ilyich's death, the mere fact of the death of a near acquaintance aroused, as usual, in all who heard of it, the complacent feeling that it is he who is dead and not I. Each one thought or felt, well, he's dead, but I'm alive. But the more intimate of Ivan Ilyich's acquaintances, his so-called friends, could not help thinking also that they would now have to fulfill the very tiresome demands of propriety by attending the funeral service and paying a visit of condolence to the widow. Fedor Vasilievich and Peter Ivanovich had been his nearest acquaintances. Peter Ivanovich had studied law with Ivan Ilyich and had considered himself to be under obligations to him. Having told his wife at dinner time of Ivan Ilyich's death and of his conjecture that it might be possible to get her brother transferred to their circuit, Peter Ivanovich sacrificed his usual nap, put on his evening clothes, and drove to Ivan Ilyich's house. At the entrance stood a carriage and two cabs. Leaning against the wall in the hall, downstairs near the cloakstand, was a coffin lid covered with cloth of gold, ornamented with gold cord and tassels that had been polished up with metal powder. Two ladies in black were taking off their fur coats. Peter Ivanovich recognized one of them as Ivan Ilyich's sister, but the other was a stranger to him. His colleague Schwartz was just coming downstairs, but on seeing Peter Ivanovich enter, he stopped and winked at him, as if to say, "Ivan Ilyich has made a mess of things, not like you and me." Schwartz's face, with his Piccadilly whiskers and his slim figure in evening dress, had, as usual, an air of elegant solemnity which contrasted with the playfulness of his character, and had a special piquancy there, or so it seemed to Peter Ivanovich. Peter Ivanovich allowed the ladies to precede him, and slowly followed them upstairs. Schwartz had not come down, but remained where he was, and Peter Ivanovich understood that he wanted to arrange where they should play bridge that evening. The ladies went upstairs to the widow's room, and Schwartz, with seriously compressed lips but a playful look in his eyes, indicated by a twist of his eyebrows the room to the right where the body lay. Peter Ivanovich, like everyone else on such occasions, entered feeling uncertain what he would have to do. All he knew was that at such times it is always safe to cross oneself, but he was not quite sure whether one should make obeisances while doing so. He therefore adopted a middle course. On entering the room, he began crossing himself and made a slight movement resembling a bow. At the same time, as far as the motion of his head and arm allowed, he surveyed the room. Two young men, apparently nephews, one of them who was a high school pupil, were leaving the room, crossing themselves as they did so. An old woman was standing motionless, and a lady with strangely arched eyebrows was saying something to her in a whisper. A vigorous, resolute church reader, in a frock coat, was reading something in a loud voice, with an expression that precluded any contradiction. The butler's assistant, Gerasim, stepping lightly in front of Peter Ivanovich, was strewing something on the floor. Noticing this, Peter Ivanovich was immediately aware of a faint odour of a decomposing body. The last time he had called on Ivan Ilyich, Peter Ivanovich had seen